Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And it's all about full compliance with the Constitution, folks. As a matter of fact, we're going to dive into something regarding full compliance with the Constitution, because we typically don't dive into, I don't, dive into the grapefruit of the day. Grapefruit of the day is, everybody's talking about this, and I hate to make a show kind of time dominant. In other words, here's a situation that happened at a very specific point in time. Unless I can make it a great opportunity to learn. And so we're dealing with the Supreme Court, or what we want to talk about is the Supreme Court case that came out regarding the tariffs. And so welcome back, Sean.
Good to be here, sir. Thank you.
All right. And so as I look at, and I'm trying to find it, here it is right here. So what I did was I looked up the law itself or the ruling, and then I go, interesting. Here's a case that the plaintiff is Learning Resources, Inc. Now, everybody is talking, as a matter of fact, there's these constitutionalists that are all talking about, this IEAA, this, and not one is actually saying that this case should never have seen the light of day in a court. And as a matter of fact, this business should never have ever been created in the state of Illinois. So when all of a sudden you have so many ways of violating the Constitution that you can literally set up and there's a word for it when you have a series of actions, and I forget what it's called, but my father really loved them, where you had dominoes fall and balls roll and knock, cups off, and, it just would perpetuate and go all the way around somebody's yard, the world's largest of these types of things. And, you can do that. And almost every artifact that you use would be unconstitutional. The magnitude of the unconstitutionality of this case is why it's all about understanding the Constitution and demanding full compliance of our governments. So here's the question. Here's a corporation that was created in the state of Illinois. Right? That's what we got, Sean, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so, and if you don't mind, you can just, I'm going to try to make sure I'm laying it all out right. You're going to keep me straight on this, because I sometimes can get my tongue tied and say it backwards or what have you. But, okay, so here's a corporation that was established. It's called Learning Resources, Inc., LLC. And they created a company, Rick Wallenberg, basically went out and created this company. It's a toy company, an educational toy company. But he's not making toys in Illinois, nor does he have any business model of making any toys that I know of in the United States. He's making toys where?
China.
So here is a company that made its business model that it would manufacture and create an agreement, an engagement with a Chinese manufacturer that they would manufacture for him and basically ship these things into the United States for him based on this contract. Now, near as I can tell, an individual cannot create a business agreement with a foreign nation or foreign entity. Constitutionally, I believe it's called the Logan Act. No person other than emissaries under the president can actually go out and do any type of engagement regarding governing and things that fall under the umbrella of government. So individuals can't do this, nor can an individual create a compact, nor can a state allow an engaging contract to be initiated under their umbrella. Article 1, Section 10 forbids the state from being able to be involved directly in an engaging contract. Is that not correct?
Sounds right, sir.
Okay. So here's a corporation that created itself and its entire premise of its function and business model unconstitutional. And the fact that Illinois violated the Constitution and all these states, this is so crazy, folks, that everybody's doing it.
Well, it must be okay then. Right? Well, everybody's doing it, so why can't I?
We've heard that, right? I mean, this is how important this is of starting to get things right. When we have our own companies and our own profits and our own profit models, and we make our own stuff, then it's ours. But when we sell ourselves out to global corporations to come in here and basically employ us so that they can make the profits off of our labor, which, you know, we get a stipend, but they're siphoning off our wealth. And right here is another case of siphoning off our wealth. So bottom line, the federal government's responsibility is to protect the sovereignty of the states and the sovereignty of the union to ensure that no foreign government is creating these types of entanglements, period, or foreign entity, which is an agent for their government. Because it's all connected, folks. When you talk about a communist government, it's all connected. And even in the free governments, even in Germany and places like that, because they're not really free, they're socialist, all businesses are subsidized by the governments. Sean, do you know of a state and or nation that the government is not involved in subsidizing and managing the businesses?
No.
Yeah, okay. Because I know Japan, Korea, I mean, anybody that is considered an industrial nation. Now, maybe you could have probably said some nations in Africa and probably some nations in maybe South America, one or two, and maybe some islands, just because they aren't industrious. They've not got there. But the fact of the matter is, this business, Learning Resources, Inc., had no standing, no constitutional standing to create the case to go into the court of Illinois. Wonder why I'm thinking of Louisiana. So they had no business going into the Illinois court to basically sue. What they did was they exposed themselves for being an illegitimate corporation operating in undermining good old America and basically helping a foreign nation siphon off our wealth. But nobody picked up on this. Folks, let's go into the Constitution real quick. Article 1, Section 8. And I don't know what the subsection is, but it is the subsection, off the top of my head, it is the subsection where we will find the Commerce Clause. And so when we look at Article 1, Section 8, and the Commerce Clause, it's subsection 2. Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations. So if there's commerce involved, you're going to produce something, you're going to ship it here. Oh, who has the responsibility? Congress. So in other words, this learning resource company that went outside of Congress, and oh, by the way, Congress cannot abrogate that responsibility. And oh, by the way, the president actually controls all of these foreign trade agreements. He controls who we actually do business with on the foreign side. The president has the authority to say China is a hostile nation. They have only proven themselves. Now, here's the problem. We've had so much leadership allow us to create these interdependencies on China that pulling the tooth of getting China out of our mouth would be very hurtful. But would it kill us? No. most people would go, you know what, how long would it take for us to overcome our dependencies on China for these things? Are we in a strategic place that we could not let that short period of time, because I can tell you, whatever that estimate is, we could probably cut it in half, because good old American innovation, know-how, and so forth, there's no doubt in my mind. There may be some physical constraints, you know, like rare earth minerals and the production thereof, that may actually, but that doesn't mean that we can't start doing it. It doesn't mean that we don't have, and people are starting to get pretty wise on this entire global interdependency on these things like rare earth minerals and manufacturing, the pharmaceuticals, all this crap, to where we really, if you're not an American, you should be very scared that there is no plan and strategy to actually end all of these dependencies. We've heard lip service from Trump, but where is the execution of actually cutting these dependencies and bringing everything home? As a matter of fact, no, we've actually heard Trump bringing in German companies and other international companies to start making their cars here. What? The Constitution doesn't allow these things, folks. Are you understanding what I'm saying? Constitution, they can't be doing these things. So to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states, they do not have the authority to regulate commerce within a state. The state of Illinois is responsible for regulating and making sure that these businesses are not engaging directly with foreign nations. So if Trump's looking for an opportunity to go into Illinois and start removing governors and everybody else that's all involved in this insurrection against the Constitution in government, Washington, California, they're all doing the same. I mean, I've said this. I have said that the ability to enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is almost, if I had a meme, and let's just say, you know, you're opening up this door, that's a little video meme, right? And, you know, you've got one guy going into a state and he's got this bat. And this bat is basically enforcing the Constitution. And so you open the door, and this guy jumps into the room, and he's literally being entangled by pinatas coming from the ceiling. Where, I mean, you know, just putting the bat up, he's hitting a few of them. And just trying to get back, he's getting entangled. It's just that bad. And on the lettering on the outside of each of the pinatas, it says, violation of the Constitution, violation of the Constitution. It is that bad, folks. We are in a constitutional crisis. And so this is an hyperbole. The president has the responsibility of ensuring that the execution of the constitutional laws are being enforced. And oh, by the way, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is a constitutional law. It does and can fall under the one little thing that the Department of Justice could literally and legitimately do is go out and start removing politicians and judges from their seats, escorting them out, saying you're losing your credentials, you're not getting paid anymore, and it's over. You had a great run, pat them on the back and say, wow, you got away with this for centuries, but it's over. Sorry. We're actually enforcing the law now. We're actually going to start demanding compliance with the Constitution. Folks, you know that Make America Great Again? That is the only way. And as a matter of fact, unfortunately, which, you know, I'm not here to piss people off. I know everybody wants their vengeance. They want their pound of flesh and they want justice. They want these people behind bars. Let me ask you, Sean, you tell me. Are we better off struggling with the legal system, trying to get these people into a perp walk and into a court where we might get a conviction to remove these people? Or are we better off executing Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and getting them out of office immediately, banning them from access and everything else, and wholesale all the other people, all their fellow conspirators, all these other people that are involved? Because near as I can tell, getting rid of all these people. Now you can walk into the courts and start looking at their emails and everything else and going, oh my gosh, look how bad this is. And now you can actually
start. It's not going to work.
What's that?
The courts aren't going to work.
Absolutely.
Because they're factioned off as well.
Absolutely. Okay, so, and it's the same thing with Congress. It's the same thing at the state level. If we started doing wholesale removals, and in other words, going in and picking one state, and as a matter of fact, you know, hey, everybody, you know, in these other states were coming for you. It's just, you know, we can't employ enough people to deal with this level of corruption in government. But we're coming for you. And if you really don't have a lot of blood on your hands, we're not going to come after you. We're going to give you a first and final. And we're going to just start moving forward. And we'll come back right to you if you violate your oath. Everything you do better be in full support of demanding full compliance of that Constitution. You better oppose every infraction against it and call out every one of your compadres in the court system, every one of your compadres in the legislature, period, or everyone in government. You call them out and demand that they be held accountable to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Then, once we get all these people out, there's plenty of lawyers out there that may want to press charges and actually get their pound of flesh, get the wealth back. Absolutely, we want to do that. But we can't see the light of day until we start knocking these pinatas down. And the only way to do that, because if you're doing this one at a time, case by case, the courts will be bogged down. These people will die hanging from the ceiling. All these pinatas will just be sitting there, and we can't do anything unless we exercise Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is almost like getting a surgical tool, or, you know, like a chainsaw, this huge laser, and just go, you know, from one corner, you know, put it in one corner of the room, and then just go from one wall, then you come all the way across to the perpendicular wall, or, you know, to the other edge, and boom, all of them are gone. They're all down. There you go. Because the only ones that are coming down are because these are only the constitutional violations. Those who are actually in violation of the Constitution in just a magnitude of ways, a plethora of ways. So the point is, folks, that how come nobody made comment that this case had no jurisdiction to go into that court and there was no standing. You know, so let's step back on standing. Everybody's learned about this thing called standing. Oh, you have to prove you've been harmed. Well, if we know that the federal government's responsibility is to regulate the commerce with foreign nations, and you made a business decision to regulate commerce with a nation that has been very aggressive in siphoning off our wealth, and we come up with a retaliatory tariff, how are you hurt? Because the federal government has this responsibility of doing this. How does this corporation even equate that they have standing? Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
But what really kills me is all of these pseudo-constitutionalists who, because they love the fact that the law, this maze of law, this, you know, case law, precedents, and all of this drifting and unconstitutional laws coming from the court, these lawyers love it. Oh, and they're just showing off how they know this case and this case, and in this case they did this, and who cares? Most all of those cases should never have even existed, and the subject matter should never have happened because they were violations of the Constitution. Ugh. So don't tell me that there's these constitutionalists out there. They're not constitutionalists. Hillsdale College will not teach you about the Constitution and how it was defined to the framers. No one is doing this except for us. And there's, you know, we're working with groups and teams and so forth a lot around a lot of different states. And if we're not in your state yet, then what's holding you up from getting this started? And so this all boils down to, again, because we're trying to set the stage on the importance of constitutional compliance. You have to start using petitions to actually start forcing one, either the party and or both, the party and your county government, to start creating citizen committees of understanding the Constitution and demanding constitutional compliance, creating constitutional compliance committees. These committees will actually function more than just, you know, a learning team. These committees will actually start functioning as a jury to determine whether the Constitution is being violated. They're not a jury to indict or convict. They're a jury to advise the commissioners that they need to petition the state government. They need to call upon all the other counties to get engaged. These are violations against the Constitution. And oh, by the way, if you've got some pseudo lawyer that's in the prosecuting attorney's position or the district attorney's position, right? And they say, oh, well, you can't give that legal advice, but they can't constitutionally refuse. They may say, oh, well, this isn't a county matter. It is a county matter when it comes to the U.S. Constitution, because when your county commissioners or supervisors have taken an oath to support that, then you can demand that they actually start standing up to the state government and start calling upon all the other counties to join with them in holding the government of this state and all governments within this state accountable to the U.S. Constitution. That is well within their will well. And when an attorney tries to deflect and tries to actually stop and tries to basically enable, they're enabling the subversion of the Constitution and the undermining of our government and our rights, folks. I mean, this goes to such a great magnitude. This is our legal system that is literally killing us. And many of these folks, they want to claim that they're good people. I'm a good person. I'm a conservative. Ah, but you cannot cross my line. We own everything of the law, and they don't. We are not a judiciary form of government. We're a Republican form of government. And so this is one of the reasons why we're here to tell you folks, if we wake up the Republic and our Republican form of government, our problems will start going away pretty quickly. We just need you to start demanding compliance to where you live and getting your party and your county to do their cotton-picking job. And if not, replace them. And as a matter of fact, there's got to be plenty of people that are pretty pissed off all around America in red counties and red states that are more than happy. I mean, if you've got people, and so I hate to say this, because what do they call it? It's the Trump delusional syndrome or something like that?
Trump derangement syndrome.
There we go. So I think that there is there's two TDSs. There's TDS1 and TDS2, which is the Trump derangement syndrome, where people are owned because of their hatred for Trump, you know, this emotional feeling that they're overcome with. And I believe that the sycophants that are the Trump delusional syndrome, because they're delusional to think that Trump is actually doing what he's supposed to be doing. Folks, accountability is job one for every citizen. Just because we think he's doing okay, we like what he's doing, doesn't mean that he's doing the right thing. And your ignorance is a big part of the problem. You are the biggest part of the problem. And until we, the people, actually understand what we need to be demanding and be very straight and forward with this, we're going to suffer. We're at the precipice of losing everything. And so, therefore, the blood is on our hands until we stand up and do the right thing. This is why we keep on telling you we need to learn, pray, and act. And that acting is doing the right thing and demanding they do the right thing and holding them accountable. We'll be right back after this short promo.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so without any further ado, unless you've got other things you want to contribute, Sean, because I might have forgotten.
I was just going to say on the thing where you were talking about the TDS,
uh-huh.
I think it's not just Trump. We need to get people to understand that our government is a structure and it's not a popularity contest. I don't know if you got a chance to watch that video I sent you about Robert Barnes, where he was kind of talking in the same vein. And the hero worship, the celebrity that has been developed around our supposed representatives that everybody calls our leaders who rule us, is just so far out of touch with what their job is supposed to be. You know, they've taken on this air of celebrity as if they're somehow above us.
Yeah. So actually, maybe
I don't remember the exact quote, but I remember reading or hearing about Thomas Jefferson talking about how a public servant, when you go into the government to represent the people, you're supposed to take a step down from the citizen because you're serving the citizens, not be elevated onto this pedestal like you're some kind of hero or celebrity or what have you because you're in the government. You have a job to do, just like the guy, you know, laying asphalt has a job to do.
Right. So I would, because we kind of cover this in a different view, I would say it's PDS and CDS, the progressive derangement syndrome and the conservative delusional syndrome.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they're out there literally, you know, it's like you could throw something out there and they would run for it and they would fight over it. And the fight would be literally polarized and ideological. The progressives would want to, you know, make some, you know, immoral, evil thing about that and, you know, and elevate it. And the progressives would want to, you know, sanctify it and, you know, make it holy, you know, so forth and so on. Does that make sense? Because they fight over the education system that way. They fight over the health care. They fight over welfare. Oh yeah, we need welfare, but we need it to be, you know, holy. We shouldn't be paying for drugs, and no, government shouldn't be doing it. Period.
Fit our morals.
Yeah, so correct. So anyway, so maybe in a grand scheme of things, but right now it's all about Trump, and it's the TDS 1, TDS 2, but really I think it is a PDS and CDS, so because it's really conservative progressive. And when it comes down to there's no derangement or delusion regarding a constitutionalist, because the Constitution say, well, that shouldn't even exist. Oh, well, that should,
yeah.
That
it really reminds me of Cat in the Hat. Thing one and thing two and Trump's Cat in the Hat.
Yeah.
And thing one is the progressive sociopaths and thing two is the conservative. And they're just destroying everything.
Yeah. And we're destroying James Madison's notes on the Constitutional Convention. We're just ripping through this. And so where we left off last time, we were going through, let me kind of get back up a little bit. We had covered Hamilton's plan, and they were kind of going through, Hamilton made a defense of his plan, and then King just made a comment regarding that. And now we're basically going to, Wilson is going to make an address, Hamilton's plan now. We didn't get a chance to cover this. So let's go ahead and move into Wilson's comment, because we'll notice that Hamilton is still there and he defends, you know, his plan, or basically defends, he defends what Wilson said. So let's go ahead and go into that.
On page 72, correct? Mr. Wilson entered into a contrast?
No, no, no. So we're actually on page 89.
89, okay.
Yeah. Yes. This is right before Wednesday, January 20th. Right before that. Wilson, Hamilton, and then they adjourn and they go into the 20th of...
Yeah. All righty.
Okay.
So we're on Mr. Wilson in the center of the page.
Uh-huh. Yep.
All righty. Mr. Wilson could not admit the doctrine that when the colonies became independent of Great Britain, they became independent also of each other. He read the Declaration of Independence, observing thereon that the United Colonies were declared to be free and independent states, and inferring that they were independent not individually, but unitedly, and that they were confederated as they were independent states.
Okay, so then Hamilton basically replies on this concept of this independent sovereign position. You know, and I think the king, because in the treaty, it was very clear that the king recognize the independent sovereignty of each of the states. It was like a sleight of hand that he was not recognizing the general government or this union government that was created, this federal government, what do you want to call it, Continental Congress. He just looked at that as, you know, an artifact that he chose to ignore, to, I think, pursue. You know, it's almost like, you know, what Satan would do is to kind of, you know, make an appeal to the lusts of your heart or what have you. Oh, yeah, our independence is sovereign. We're better by ourselves than in the Union. So anyway, Hamilton makes his response.
Colonel Hamilton assented to the doctrine of Mr. Wilson. He denied the doctrine that the states were thrown into a state of nature. He was not yet prepared to admit the doctrine that the Confederacy could be dissolved by partial infractions of it. He admitted that the states met now on an equal footing, but could see no inference from that against concerting a change of the system in this particular. He took this occasion of observing, for the purpose of appeasing the fears of the small states, that two circumstances would render them secure under a national government, in which they might lose the equality of rank they now held. One was the local situation of the three largest states, Virginia, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania. They were separated from each other by distance of place, and equally so, by all the peculiarities which distinguished the entrance of some state from those of another. No combination there, therefore, could be dreaded. In the second place, as there was a gradation in the states from Virginia, the largest, down to Delaware, the smallest, it would always happen that ambitious combinations among a few states might and would be counteracted by defensive combinations of a greater extent among the rest. No combination has been seen among large counties, merely as such, against lesser counties. The more close the union of the states, and the more complete the authority of the whole, the less opportunity will be allowed the stronger states to injure the weaker. And they adjourned.
Okay, so it's interesting how he talked about the larger states being Massachusetts,
Pennsylvania, and Virginia. What? How's Massachusetts larger? It's a smaller state. He's referring to population. What's making Virginia, or I should say, what's making Massachusetts large? And actually, we've covered this, I think, enough times to say, okay, you know, obviously, the population is a real issue, and the states are doing everything and anything impossible that they can, you know, to try to make sure they preserve their sovereignty, you know, because they just don't have the population. Now, as I look at the, you know, the different states, Pennsylvania being 434, and I told you this before, they were the second largest, but I don't think Massachusetts was the third largest, because I believe North Carolina was actually larger, and by the population, they were 393, where Massachusetts was 378,000. So 5,000 larger in Carolina. But nevertheless, the whole point is, and when we look at the conventions for ratification, all of the large states pushed back because they felt that they shouldn't have to lose their power. They were fine the way they were. They were able to have advantages, and having advantages is a good thing, right? Isn't that not, that's correct, right?
If it doesn't disadvantage someone else.
Well, so, okay.
Well, somebody's always going to be better than someone else at something.
No. That's not what I mean.
It's unfair where they're using it against them to injure them.
Yeah, so the person that's first up the stream, the guy that owns the property at the point of the stream, let's say it's a spring-fed stream, so it's going to run throughout the year, and you're upstream from everybody, and you actually, you know, get your drinking water from the very top end of the stream. You use, you know, the middle of the stream for bathing, cleaning, and so forth. And at the bottom end of the stream, you're using it for your refuse or, you know, your sewage. And so you're okay with how you use that stream. Everybody downstream from you, you have an advantage, and they don't. Right? And now that stream has been rendered useless because of you. Or, you know, back in those days, I think they didn't think about those things in some respects, because that was one of the causes of the plagues and so forth. They didn't understand microbiology, that type of thing. But anyway, so my point is that, there, you know, people, when they have the advantage, well, yeah, okay, I got the advantage. Sucks to be you. They don't care. And even when we look at people who, you know, end up getting an advantage because, you know, you're living in a state that's actually paying you, like Alaska pays its citizens that live there a stipend on its energy profits. So that's an advantage of living there, right? There's a lot of disadvantages of living in Alaska, but my point is that people usually aren't quick to give up an advantage. And a good case in point, in labor, when we had, because I had different teams on different programs, and when we had a program that was paying overtime and long periods of, I mean, years where guys would go, they'd be on the program and they would start working, you know, and it's, there's always these games because people were taking advantage and you can't call them out on it,
But there's like a guy that, I'm only going to do my 10 hours so I make a little extra money, but I'm not going to sacrifice a lot of my time from the family. Where other guys are, you know, making, you know, they're almost double time. They're working 140, 180 hours, what have you. But it doesn't matter regardless. What ends up happening, and this is the nature of most people because we're not taught. We're not taught to, you know, save and to function within, you know, what is function within the parameters of a proper budget. I guess that's the best way of putting it, because almost every single one of the guys that gals and guys that I had, gals were probably a little more disciplined, but their household wasn't spending their overtime and baking that as their base pay. So what ends up happening when this guy all of a sudden loses or goes from that program to another program, and now he doesn't get overtime, and now all of a sudden he considers it a cut in pay, and now he's looking and he's taken on debt based on his other pay, and he's going, hey, I can't afford this, hey, I need more money, because they felt they were entitled. Does that make sense? So they find themselves taking advantage, and they forget that they put themselves, by taking advantage, they put themselves at risk. So anyway, so as I look at these big states, they were taking advantages, but they were putting themselves at risk, because any of these one states could have easily gotten involved in war. Because they could have pissed off, you know, the wrong, you know, the nation that decided, you know what, that's the last straw. We're not putting up with this anymore, and we're taking it out on you. Or start impressing their commerce and stealing their ships and taking their sailors and everything else. I mean, there's all sorts of ways that advantages could quickly turn into disadvantages. But if you are a big state, you're not going to want to give up, you know, what you've got. It's almost like when somebody has an organization and they've got all these people, they fight and fight and fight to grow, you know, their organization. Oh, I need more people. I need more people. And instead, they don't function on, this is exactly what I need. They just try to grow their organization. And you would think that they get paid based on how many heads work for them. But it doesn't work that way. But you'd think that that was their motivation or something. But technically, we call these guys empire builders, right? They're just trying to create this huge empire because then they carry more weight. And supposedly, because all these people are, you know, like voters in the workplace. Yeah, you know, we're great. We need more. We need more. Anyway, so these guys, when all of a sudden it's time to actually and legitimately cut back the workforce, it's almost like you're killing them. You're cutting their arms off. I can't do this anymore. I can't do this. And that when you're in that state, then I see how you make yourself so vulnerable. And the problem was these states all went into the Articles of Confederation, right? They all willingly ratified and said, we're going to be a part of this. And being a part of this meant that they were supposed to be paying. It was all on the honor system. And because it was on the honor system, what did they do? There's a word for it. They were on the honor system. Were they what?
They lied.
Well, they did the dishonorable thing. They were on the honor system, and they chose to be unhonored, whatever the opposite of honorable is. They decided not to be honorable. They decided to not pay. They decided to do what they could take advantage of. And they ran with it. And so, in a way, you can kind of look at America, and you can say, you know, that's kind of in our blood. Because how many Americans today are taking advantage of, boy, if you knew you could get food stamps and, that, you know, with no problem with the job and everything you got, they'll still give you food stamps. then that family or whoever is out there, they're going to be getting food stamps. Why not take advantage? You're turning down free money. That, to me, is a real paradigm problem with America. Now, there's this concept of enlightenment. See, America and the leaders in thought and the leaders of the nation and institutions were, you know, kind of moving towards this. At the point in time of the Articles of Confederation, enlightenment could not move further because the states constrained it. Once the Constitution, you know, was created, enlightenment actually started really jumping and moving forward because states started cooperating with each other, and they actually started creating more synergy and symbiosis. There were, sure, there were problems, but for the most part, they were, you know, doing well. There were these divisive things like slavery that were still out there, but for the most part, America started taking big growths and they taking, I'll just say, these advancements in leaps and bounds in global economic dealings with DuPont in selling borax. In the early days of the 1800s, DuPont became a monster because of what it was able to do in the international market in selling borax. So the Constitution and the Union kind of allowed everybody to kind of come together, and enlightenment started growing, but the other things started growing as well. And what ended up happening is the avarice and the lust for greed, more power, and so forth, forced, or I should say, started stifling and started suppressing enlightenment. Now, I can't say enlightenment just went away, because look at how, as a nation, it was just kind of baked in, just like taking advantage, this idea of not taking no for an answer, this idea of not being bound by limits of the atmosphere, going to the moon and doing things that nobody had ever done before. We did that because that was also a part of the American spirit. And in those days, one could say that there were more people with that type of American spirit than there was the people that were taking advantage. And we could see that, you know, really until the weight of the true progressive entitlement state really showed up and started going on steroids. And that all happened in the 60s when they started rewarding fatherless homes with more welfare, when they started actually pouring more money in, you know, to these social problems so that, you know, people wouldn't change their behavior and their circumstances. They would feel enabled to stay in the condition that they were in. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
And so as people saw that, they go, hey, this person's living better than I am. And they've got all these, what do they call them, baby mamas or whatever. I know I won't get it right, but you know, they've got that new language situation going on, and everybody's going, well, sure, I want to do that. And it got out of hand, and it became so destructive. Look what it did. This was not a single, you know, demographic problem. This went through the scope of all of America, except for possibly the one demographic that basically didn't get sucked into this. Guess what group that was? There may be another group, so if you tell me, then I go, oh, that's another group then. The Asians. Boomers. The Asians. The Asians did not go down the path of taking on welfare. They maintained their discipline. They maintained their focus on education, productivity, and those things. And so, right?
Yes, sir. I agree.
So anyway, all right. Well, let's get back to the the Constitutional Convention, and we come back, and Mr. Blunt, basically from North Carolina, finally takes his seat, and then the first proposal of the report from the Committee of the Whole comes back from the House. And so Mr. Gorham basically kind of goes down this path. And I want to make sure that, you know, something tells me that I think we covered this. Did we not cover the militia already? Or did, maybe not.
I don't think so.
Let's go ahead and pick up Mr. Ellsworth. Let me do the proposal. So Mr. William Blunt of North Carolina made the proposal of, you know, before the House, and to basically read the report from the committee. And so Mr. Ellsworth seconded that by Mr. Gorham, and I guess he's the one that made the move. Mr. Gorham moves to alter it so as to run, quote, that the government of the United States ought to consist of the supreme legislative, executive, and judiciary, close quote. So let's kind of jump from that perfunctory thing to what Mr. to what Mr. Randolph starts off with in Lansing, because we're going to get into some really good, interesting things when we hit the militia with Colonel Mason. Go ahead.
Mr. Randolph did not object to the change of expression, but apprised the gentleman who wished for it that he did not admit it for the reasons assigned, particularly that of getting rid of a reference to the people for ratification. The motion of Mr. Ellsworth was acquiesced in.
No competition. Sure, no competition. Nem con basically means nobody voted against it. It just unanimously passed. Okay, so go ahead and do the second resolved, and then we'll pause there because we're running out of time.
The second resolve that the national legislature ought to consist of two branches, taken up, the word national struck out as of course.
Right.
Mr. Lansing.
Okay, so then we're going to stop right there. Right. So Mr. Lansing from New York, like I point out here, he's an anti-federalist, then kind of points out, and I think this may be, I don't think he talks about, yeah, he does, he talks about the commission. Yeah, so anyway, We'll get back to this because we've got less than a minute. Anything else? Any other save rounds? Anything you want to bring up next time?
No, sir.
All right.
Learn, pray, act.
All right. There we go. So, folks, kind of coming to this close, we didn't get a lot covered, but I'm hoping that I at least piqued your interest with this idea that looking at things constitutionally, challenging the constitutional validity of something first and foremost is what every American should be doing. Because remember, our governments get their authority from the constitutions. And if we're allowing them to create their own authorities, then we're a part of the problem. And that goes back to me poking everybody in the eyes. So, we all deserve it, though, because it is our fault. Until we actually start working together and uniting in holding them accountable. And so with that, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email.
Thank you.